Welcome to the Invest Podcast with Tobias Salinger. In sessions recorded live at Financial Planning's Invest West Conference in San Francisco, we dive deep with some of the top minds in wealth management. For more on the latest news in wealth tech, subscribe to our weekly Invest Insights email newsletter on our website, financial-planning.com. And we are so pleased to have as our guest right now, David DeVoe, the founder and managing director of the investment bank and consulting firm DeVoe and Partners. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thank you. Thank you. It's good to be here, DeVoe.
And roughly an hour from now, you're set to take the stage for a panel entitled How Technology Impacts a Firm's Valuation. And I'm really interested in this panel because it bridges a gap between tech and RIA M&A, which I haven't heard talked about very much. You're moderating the panel with Christor Larson of Schultz Collins, Brian Shinson of Springboard Advisory Group, and Gurinder Ahluwalia of 280 Cap Markets. Can we just preview it a little bit for listeners who might not be able to attend in person? What are the main factors playing into how tech impacts a firm's valuation?
Yeah, I think, well, first, thanks for having me, Tobias. It's an honor to be part of this, not only the event, but to do this podcast. So it's a lot of fun to be here. And you and I are of the same mind. I think this is a unique topic, a fascinating topic, you know. How does technology impact evaluation? And if you think about it, you can look at it on a couple different levels. You know, if you start at a very macro level, we're talking about two of the greatest trends in the industry, essentially the power of technology and the M&A activity that we're seeing converging. So I think it's fascinating to think through that intersection point, the power of innovation with this momentum that we have in mergers and acquisitions. And I think, you know, the answer of that question at the 30,000 feet is really going to point toward how this industry is going to be shaped by these factors. This will, the convergence of these two trends will ultimately shape the ecosystem that we have here within the wealth management community. And then on a micro level, it's a completely different set of questions. You know, how and even if, you know, technology does affect the valuation of a firm. So we'll be getting our fingernails dirty and rolling up our sleeves, thinking through, you know, both for buyers and for sellers, whether it's technology innovation or integration, you know, what are the different factors that may influence and make a firm more valuable. But, you know, counterpoint, we'll be getting into whether it can actually be a liability as well.
Interesting. Well, I'm sure it'll be great for attendees, and I think advisors will want to hear about it because we know M&A activity just keeps going higher and higher. Your firm is very well known and appreciated for your quarterly reports, which all the wealth management publications are always covering, and because they have such great and an interesting numbers. So the latest one for Q3 showed 36 RIA M&A deals. Volume is on track to set another annual record. What are the main factors causing all of this activity that just continues to ramp up and up?
Yeah, yeah. Matter of fact, it's fascinating. You know, we think in terms of we'll potentially have another record year. This would be our sixth successive record year of M&A activity. But the data point is already written. You know, within the first 9 months of this year, we saw 101 transactions, which actually barely eclipses the all-time record that we had last year. So, we're actually seeing not only continued momentum of M&A activity, but acceleration of M&A activity. It's becoming hotter and hotter, and it's driven by a couple factors. You know, I've been doing this for 17 years. You know, the first 8.5 years at Schwab, launching and leading their M&A platform, and then DeVoe and Company has now been live 8 years. Over that life cycle, for the first say 15 years I was doing this, succession planning, or the lack of succession planning, more accurately, was the number one driver of mergers and acquisitions. It will again be the number one driver several years. That's a whole nother conversation. The lack of succession planning is conspiring to create what I think is a looming crisis in this industry. But interestingly, for the last 2 years, it has not been the number one driver. The last 2.5 years, the number one driver for M&A activity has been the interest in scale. So what we've seen is an evolution, and it's not that succession planning has so much slowed down, it's just that the interest and scale has accelerated and I think really pumped up those numbers. And what we've seen is, I think, you know, I want to be respectful in the words that I use, but a maturation of the market, or perhaps a greater maturity of the advisors themselves. You know, 15 years ago, 10 years, even 5 years ago, there was almost this this passion, borderline arrogance, again, I say it in a respectful way, of entrepreneurship and independence. Yeah. You know, people had left Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or this firm or that. They couldn't be happier to make all the decisions in their company and their life. And there was a lot of conviction around that. I will never, you know, sell my company again. I'll never work for another company. I'll never not make all the decisions.
Right, right.
Well, we hit a point where I think a lot of advisors are now thinking, wait a sec, do I need to make every single decision in the firm? You know, this is wearing on me. I don't have the time or the energy, the inclination. This isn't a good use of my time. So in many cases, we're seeing advisors that see the potential power of joining a much larger organization and giving up degrees of control for the benefits of scale. You know, technology is what we're talking about today. You know, you join a company like Hightower, they have not one or two or five people on that team. They have 36 people on their technology team. You know, a company like Mercer probably has 20 plus, you know, so whether it's technology or compliance or human capital or HR, there can just be a lot of power in these mergers that are occurring.
I see. And I'm glad you brought up Hightower. They're one of your clients and a very large one at that. Definitely something I wanted to talk about was your recent announcement of your support for Hightower in its strategic investment into Schultz Collins. That's a practice with about $1 billion in client assets. And you basically connected the parties and facilitated the deal. Is that right? How did that work?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, it's an interesting story, and clearly it's a great preview for folks or those that aren't there, because Christopher will be on stage able to talk about it a little bit. It was a last second ad. Unfortunately, Greg Friedman wasn't able to do it due to a family item. But yeah, so we've known the folks over at Schultz Collins for, you know, probably, well, before I even founded Development Company.
I see.
We've helped them in a variety of ways. We've done some strategic work for them. They actually spun off part of their business, a 401k business years ago. We helped with that. We also helped with succession planning. One of the principles was moving toward retirement. How do we take those shares and re-engage them with G2 or even G3? So, you know, we've been friends with those folks for years. And clearly on the other side of the equation, Hightower, just a phenomenal organization. It's been just a pleasure to watch that company grow and evolve and do some interesting things. And yeah, part of our job is to be matchmaker. So we saw a good fit there. We made the introductions. We helped, you know, guide the conversations forward. And ultimately, I think a really interesting deal, you know, $1 billion firm here in the San Francisco Bay Area that's done some neat things, joining a $70 billion platform in Hightower. So yeah, great.
Absolutely. And another recent update about your company in August, just in terms of the RIA world, they might be doing some more work with you directly as well. You started a capital and lending referral service for RIAs. So the potential sources of capital to finance these record-breaking deals are also ramping up. There are more and more options for those for that capital. Maybe several of them are in attendance at this conference as well. You know, how can advisors best evaluate their options with all of this, not to make an interest rate pun, but with all this rising interest in our space, how are advisors supposed to evaluate all their options?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you're touching on a game-changing event, I think, in the industry. We've seen more capital and lending innovation and new players coming to the market in the last 10 months than we've seen in the last 10 years. It's just been a huge ramp up. And you know, my story is personal. At Schwab, in several cases, several times over the course of 8.5 years, three different instances, I tried to bring capital into the RIA space. And you know how rich it is and how great it is and, you know, helping investors and the profitability and the stickiness of clients. You and I know that. Your listeners know that.
Right.
Bankers don't, you know? Yeah. And bankers are belt and suspenders type of people. And I went through lots of machinations to say, hey, you don't need a secondary source of repayment, which is what banks want. They want, gee, if you miss a payment, I can come in and take your inventory or machinery or fleets of trucks. Well, we don't have that in this industry. So, you know, failed, did my best, but failed to bring in some big players. We had a small SBA bank that came
right,
in.
Right.
But, you know, probably about 7 years ago, the seal broke. Live Oak Bank, which is a major SBA player, came into the marketplace. When they first contacted me, I sat down for lunch with some of the founders, and I was surprised. You know, they said, "Yeah, we're the fourth largest SBA lender in the country."
Wow.
I said, "Live Oak Bank, you know, Bank of America, yeah, Wells Fargo, yeah, there's other Live Oak, really?"
Yeah.
But they're very specialized and very focused. They only at the time focused on seven different segments. You know, vets and funeral care and things like that. So very laser focused on what they do. They ended up hiring Devoe & Company. We did the business plan for them to enter this space.
Wow.
I will tell you, they've blown away the numbers that I presented to their board. They've done a phenomenal job because the demand was there. So what's happened is, you know, I think them coming in with a big bang brought in more players. We then saw a lot of conventional players, and you're spot on. I think we have Oak Street Funding speaking at the event today. I think PPC and Skyview Partners, these are all, you know, conventional players that are looking at making loans to RIAs. So we have SBAs, we have conventional. Private equity has come in a variety of different ways, the classic ways, family office. We've also seen some product innovation, you know, revenue shares, selling shares of the revenue of a company is a new iteration. So what we started to see over the last couple of years is, you know, our clients, whether it's succession or M&A, asking, you know, gee, Dave, hey, Devoe & Company, how do we talk to these different players? So it dawned on me, we should formalize a process so that, you know, the six MDs on the team are singing from the same hymnal. But let's package that and go to the marketplace. So our Devoe Capital Works enables someone to call into a desk for free, spend 30 or 40 minutes. We're going to go through close to 30 questions about, you know, what they seek. And by the end of that, we'll weed through over 30 firms to figure out, you know, whether there's one or two or three that are really the best fit. So it's free to the advisors. And it's a great way to make sense of just this overwhelming amount of information that we have.
Wow. Yeah. And so after 30 or 40 minutes, you'd likely have an idea of a firm's valuation just right then?
Less about valuation, more about, you know, the capital provider that could be a good fit.
Okay.
So, you know, SBA can be great in a lot of ways. And matter of fact, what was great about Live Oak Bank is they've been blessed by the U.S. government to you know, make their decisions. If you go to a bank down the street, it will take you 3 months to get an SBA loan, you know?
Wow.
The government's involved, you know, imagine the DMV going through that to get it done. So there's a small set of firms, about a dozen firms that the government has rubber stamped. But SBA, you know, to do those loans, you need to be exiting the company within 12 months. You know, there's all these different parameters. You can only do a maximum of X or Y. So as we're talking to someone, we're like, oh, SBA applies or it doesn't apply. You know, conventional does this or that. Private equity, you know, for the major firms, you need a $100 million valuation. For the boutiques, you need 30. You know, all these different things we're helping guide through a series of questions so that they know, okay, here's one or two, maybe three firms that are going to really affect our needs rather than, you know, a phone book of 30 different players with 20 different business models.
I see. Yeah. I see. Well, one source that you brought up, which is a very hot topic, is the private equity capital, particularly the past couple of years in the independent broker-dealer space. We've seen some very large purchases, at least in terms of the reported purchase price, which I have no reason to doubt. You know, to what extent is it true that private equity capital is just now getting interested? There were a few players, you know, even back 7, 10 years ago or so, but it seems like there are more new ones and more global private equity players who are coming into wealth management. You know, what is it that they identified, or at what point was it that private equity became so interested in wealth management?
Yeah. No, you're spot on across the board. Private equity has, you know, thrown their fishing line into the REA pond on several occasions over the past. But, it's really accelerating. And by the way, you're spot on too. I mean, we get calls from private equity firms about every 2 weeks. And it is an interesting change. You have inside baseball because global players are now interested in the market. You know, we didn't see that a couple years ago. There's been major players, you know, back in the day, Carlyle and others, you know, these blue chip organizations have made investments in some form or fashion in this space. You know, and several others have been curious and even, you know, live exploring some opportunities. We also see, you know, the boutiques, firms like Estancia, that specialize in financial services. But there's really been a big uptick over the last couple of years, and some international players that haven't been announced have been kicking tires and looking to make investments. So there's a few drivers of that. One is good news for all of us in the RIA community. It's just a vote of confidence. We're doing great stuff. We're you know, most importantly, helping the U.S. investor the best way we can. I mean, we all live and breathe this stuff, and we know the fiduciary model, the way that REAs are really serving clients is the best way to do it. So that's great on a personal or an emotional level, but private equity is clearly more interested or as interested in the economics. And these are great firms. They're growing faster than any other part of wealth management, year in, year out. The profit margins are great, 25. They've actually expanded up to, say, 28% or more. So an industry that has high growth is sort of dominating it from a business model perspective, has high profit margins. And, you know, all the tea leaves are pointing in the direction of continued success for the industry, makes it extremely attractive for private equity, which I think is really a good thing. You know, years ago, you know, private equity was almost spoken as the boogeyman. You know, gee, they're gonna flip the firm in, like, you know, 5 or 7 years. Dave Barton, you know, he's at Mercer.
Right.
He says, yeah, and I go to another private equity firm. And then 7 years later, I go to another private equity firm. And it's okay. Like, it's not necessarily a bad thing. A matter of fact, it's insightful because, you know, sticking with Dave Barton's analogy, mm-hmm. or his process so far, is it's by intention and design that he's worked with private equity firm X, you know, 10 years ago. That firm was not just capital. They could also help. Their management team can help that company succeed better. 6 years later, it's a different company. Another private equity firm has a different set of capabilities and skill set and guidance, you know, that can help take the company to the next level, So, you know, private equity is not just a checkbook. It comes with a team of good people. And in many cases, you know, I'm not here to rave about private equity. I'm not anyone's payroll. But I think it can be powerful for the industry. And, you know, Financial Engines and Edelman is a great example.
Sure.
That blockbuster deal.
Yeah.
Could not have happened without deep pockets of private equity and, frankly, even thoughtful strategic people that have time to think through, hey, that's peanut butter, here's chocolate. You know, if we put these firms together, we can unlock a lot of value.
Ah, delicious, peanut butter and chocolate. That's
delicious
great.
Indeed.
Well, good. This has been excellent. We're almost out of time, and I want to let you get to your panel here at Invest West. I think it's going to be a great one. But just to kind of wrap it up for our listeners and our core focus at FP, and that's the advisor community. We talked about all of these different options, especially when it comes to capital. One thing we maybe didn't touch on, you know, in a deep way was just, you know, the different options when it comes to the buyer or an organization you would fold into, whether it's a Hightower or whether it's another RIA or maybe a broker dealer, or even trying to be, you know, full independent RIA. You know, how is it that advisors can kind of find their best partner when your team speaks with an RIA who calls in and tries to think about that? You know, what are the main factors that they usually think about?
Yeah. Well, I'll shift it a little bit and, you know, what they think about versus I'll be a little provocative and encourage them to,
please,
to, you know, think about these things. One is there's so many technical things. You know, you want to make sure it's a great fit in this way. Culture, probably the first time it's ever been an ink in this industry. People talk about culture all the time.
Yes.
You know, but the potential power of you know, there's a technology event here. The technology is a big part of that scale and that power, et cetera. So there's a myriad of different things, but I'd encourage anyone to take a big step back. When we work with sellers, and we spend a lot of time working with sellers, we start the conversation with a white sheet of paper. We encourage them to take some time and think about what is most important to them. Think about what their optimal situation is, not even buyer, but the optimal situation. And there's so much power to this. You are quite literally in the catbird seat in today's environment. There's so many different sophisticated, well-run buyers in the marketplace that you can not only have your pick of like, I like this one better than that, but more importantly, you know, this business model is better for what I seek to achieve as an organization. And it's interesting, Tobias, you know, we have to like pull and nudge people to actually start with that white sheet of paper. They say, well, I know the market, you know, has this, so I want these things. And we're like, no. Forget what you know of the market. What is good for you? What is good for your staff? What is good for your clients? What could this company be? How would you, if you had a crystal ball or a magic wand, I should say, how could you take it to the next level? And I think that's really the starting point. And once you have clarity and conviction around, you know, what's really interesting to you, you're not only able to find the right partner, but in many cases, folks that are moving toward retirement, this is their succession play, will work longer because they've manufactured a new job. They've designed a new job, a new role that they're passionate about and they can add more and more value to. So I think good news for RIAs in the industry. You're doing things well. You're running good companies. There's a lot of good players out there and you're really in a position to make the choices that's best for you, your staff, and your clients.
Excellent. Well, it's very exciting. And thank you very much for taking a few minutes. Good luck on the panel.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Invest Podcast presented by Financial Planning. I'm Tobias Salinger. Please subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts, and leave a review to let us know how we're doing. To keep up on the latest in digital wealth management, please also visit us online at financial-planning.com and sign up for our weekly fintech newsletter, Invest Insights. We'll talk to you again next week.